It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. For 135 years, the residents of Superior have relied on a private utility company for water, electricity, and natural gas. That's Superior Water, Light, and Power.
Issues over rate increases and the cost of lead line replacements have city officials considering whether to purchase the utility. The city's Public Works Committee met earlier this month to discuss the issues. Superior's Mayor Jim Payne joins us now. Mayor Payne, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Morning, thank you.
So should Superior own its own utility?
Well, that's the question we're going to try and answer. Ironically, just this morning, while I was listening to the show, I got the first draft of our request for qualifications for consultants to start analyzing that question. What I can tell you is the system is not working right now. We have one of the only, possibly the only private water utility in the state of Wisconsin, and we have the highest water rates in the entire state. That's Superior, which is named after our lake, Lake Superior, which is the largest source of clean, fresh water in the world. You could practically drink straight out of the lake, but we're paying more than anybody else.
What would a city-owned utility company mean for residents?
Well, it would probably mean the same thing that it does for every other resident of a city anywhere else in Wisconsin: lower rates. You know, Beloit just bought their utility a few years ago, and their rates have held steady. Our rates go up at least every 2 years, if not more often. So while it would be an expensive purchase and it would take some time to recoup those costs, I think it's going to look like the other utilities we operate: flat rates. We won't have to increase expenses for citizens.
So I'm wondering, Superior Water, Light, and Power, its parent company, Elite, based in Duluth, which is in the process of being sold to a Canadian pension board and a New York investment firm, does this acquisition factor in at all into Superior's exploration of how to take control of its own utility?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the main factor. Privatization is privatization. It's always been private. But one of the things that's supposed to have provided us comfort for years is that this has been a local company. You know, these are our neighbors that are running this service and providing this utility to us. But that's not really true anymore. For years, it's been owned by a fairly large corporation, as you said, Elite. And now that corporation won't even be a publicly traded corporation. It'll be truly private. And so we're losing even more control locally over it. Not that we had much to begin with. So it probably is time for the people of Superior to actually look at, should they just own their own water utility and protect their own access to the most vital natural resource?
Have you had conversations with the utility about this?
Yes, I've had a few conversations. They have been very tentative, but I was upfront that we are exploring this because one of the questions they had to answer is, are they willing to participate in the process? Would they voluntarily participate in a sale? They have communicated to me that they will not. They will resist the sale. The fact is, this is just too lucrative for them. But that's all the more reason for us to explore it. It shouldn't be lucrative. People shouldn't be profiting off of something that is necessary for human life.
So as you are in this exploratory stage, you have analysts now looking at some key questions. What are the steps that you're taking at this point?
So first we have to analyze the financials. How much should this cost? That will be contested. The utility is going to try and make that as expensive as possible to recoup as much money from us as possible. We have to demonstrate what this infrastructure is actually worth, and then the Wisconsin Public Service Commission will decide. So we have to collect that evidence. Then we have to create, you know, some pro formas that demonstrate how much it will cost to operate it. I'm very confident about that. We operate several utilities. We do so affordably. We are very successful accessing state and federal grants. The private utility is ineligible for those grants. So I think we can operate it much more efficiently than them. And then once the PSC approves, we go to referendum and the people decide.
You've been down this road as you hired the consultant for a wastewater treatment facility. The city-owned broadband network, Connect Superior. How do those experiences inform what you're doing now with the utility questions?
Yeah, the wastewater network was well before my time, but we've been operating it very successfully. I think we have one of the best and most successful wastewater networks in the state. And the broadband utility, I'm literally watching outside my window as it gets installed in my neighborhood right now. And so that was a very efficient process. Slow, of course. You take your time gathering the facts. You demonstrate what the risks are, what the potential rewards are, and what's the most likely scenario. You convince the city council, public service commission, and then ultimately the people. But the fact is, we're not blazing any new trails here. Every other city in the state has done this, and they're operating utilities more efficiently and more affordably than Superior is.
We are talking with Superior Mayor Jim Payne about a new proposal to look at the potential for the city purchasing its local utility company and the ramifications of that. Mayor Payne, let's talk about lead. At the October meeting, the Public Works Committee shared data from Superior Water, Light, and Power about the number of residents who have lead pipes that would be need to be replaced. How would owning the utility company help to offset replacement costs?
Well, first, let's say that there is only one acceptable number of lead pipes in a community, and it's zero. I was just in Milwaukee this week when the president announced that all utilities, public and private, will have 10 years to eliminate lead pipes. And the fact is, that is much, much more expensive for a private utility because they are not eligible for a lot of the state and federal funding that's available to replace these pipes. That's prohibited by Wisconsin law. That can only go to public utilities. So it would be much, much more affordable for the city of Superior to replace these pipes than it would be for Superior Water, Light, and Power. And even when they do, because they'll be obligated to, they're just going to pass those rates on to customers. The fact is, the city of Superior is a public service organization. We work for the people of Superior. It is in our interest to protect them from lead poisoning. It is in our interest to protect them from higher prices and to guarantee access to clean water. Only we can do that effectively. The cost will be fractions of what it would be if the private utility had to do this.
On that issue, WPR spoke with Superior Water, Light, and Power in July about the state statute that prevents homeowners from receiving federal assistance for lead pipe removal if a private utility is involved. And the utility company's manager of regulatory policies and rates, Jocelyn Scandell, said the company has talked with Wisconsin lawmakers about changing the law.
The response has been, overwhelmingly supportive. We understand that this state statute is put in place for a reason, but it's really not doing the job that it was intended to do.
So if state statute would change, would the city still have or want to purchase Superior Water, Light, and Power? Would it maintain that same position?
Again, we have to look at all of the facts involved before we make a final decision, and it's the people's decision ultimately, not mine. But there are many more reasons. Lead lines is not what precipitated this conversation. That is an important part of this conversation. And even if the law changes, we will still have more access to state and federal grants than the private utility would. But the most important part of this is our water is too expensive. They are proposing an 18% increase right now. That's on top of increases nearly every 2 years. And we're paying more for water than any other citizen in Wisconsin. Every other citizen of this state pays less for their water than the people of Superior, Wisconsin. That alone is a reason for us to actually take over this vital service and actually make sure that it serves the people and not the profits of a billion-dollar private corporation.
I want to move on now to the Blatnik Bridge replacement project that is moving ahead between Superior and Duluth. We've got the State Transportation Department's giving an update very soon on the schedule. What can you tell us? How's the project progressing?
It's moving steadily forward. We had a historic grant from the federal government. The president was here himself to announce it twice, and the project is moving forward. Yeah, on the ground, it's frustrating now. We don't consider this project in the future. It's happening now. There are interchange projects happening on the other side in Duluth, Minnesota, that if you go to Duluth, the route changes just about every other month. And so it's kind of a rough life as it is. But the big change when it actually closes in a few years, we're preparing for that pretty much every week. The business impacts, the traffic impacts, it's a part of nearly every conversation I have at City Hall right now.
How will the years of construction affect local businesses in Superior?
The best answer I can give you is we don't know. It's I tend to be the optimist in the room. There is more commerce that goes to Duluth than comes from Duluth. So there's a good chance that the frustration of it will just keep a lot of business in Superior. A lot of those businesses near the bridge too are destination businesses. Folks will go out of their way to reach, you know, the Earth Rider concert grounds or the Hammond Steakhouse, the best supper club in Superior. But the fact is, we just don't know. Big projects like this are historic. We don't have anything else we can point to. So we're doing the best we can to put everybody in the strongest position possible. And then we are prepared to adapt when the project actually begins.
I'm wondering, with historic construction, will that bring jobs? Will the local economy see an uptick in construction jobs?
It's going to be world-changing. I'm hearing numbers as many as 10,000 workers to build this bridge. Keep in mind, it's one of the most significant engineering and construction projects in the country. It's a big bridge, and it's going to take a lot of workers, probably more workers than live here now. It's going to bring a lot of people to the area. That's going to fill a lot of hotel rooms. It's going to fill a lot of restaurant seats. It's going to sell a lot of clothes in local stores. And so it's going to be a major impact to our economy. That brings challenges too, but those are the kind of challenges you want to deal with.
Mayor Payne, thank you so much for the update. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Jim Payne, Mayor of Superior, with us to talk about discussions the city is having about reclaiming its utilities, and then an update on the Blatnik Bridge replacement that connects Minnesota with Wisconsin.
Coming up, Vernon County is getting international recognition for its work on domestic violence with volunteer groups called Heart Teams that help victims after police calls.
Too often, we spend more time with the perpetrator than with the victim, and that's wrong, Rob, and that's where the Heart Team supplements that.
That's coming up next here on Wisconsin Today. It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Next week's gathering of the International Association of Chiefs of Police will feature a presentation from a rural community in western Wisconsin.
Vernon County, just south of La Crosse, will share the success of its Rural Violent Crime Reduction Initiative that focuses on domestic violence.
The program brings together a number of agencies in the area and features specialized training for local law enforcement, clinicians, and volunteers.
Susan Townsley is the program's manager and licensed clinical social worker and clinic director for Stonehouse Counseling in Viroqua. And Roy Torgerson is the Vernon County Sheriff. Sheriff Torgerson, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And Susan, thanks a lot for being with us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Susan, let's start with you. What led you and other people participating in this process to pursue this crime reduction grant?
So I'm a clinical social worker, the clinic director at a local office here. And I've had client after client in really difficult situations. And we know that it's really, really hard for victims to call for help. And when they do, it's imperative that they have someone there at that call to help them understand their options, to give them resources, and to help them find the courage to make a new choice. And I had been involved in just a really, really difficult, tragic case, and heard about a program in San Antonio through that same victim, where they were doing a volunteer response team that was really changing the course of victims' lives. So I reached out to our local DV advocates, and they were all on board, and reached out to our local law enforcement. And we are incredibly blessed with to have Sheriff Torgerson at the helm, who is very community minded and ready to just get in and do whatever we can to improve the lives of our community members. And so we started a partnership and went from there.
And Sheriff Torgerson, what are some of the challenges when it comes to domestic violence for someone in a rural community like Vernon County compared to your law enforcement colleagues maybe in urban areas?
Well, Rob, response time is an issue when you're in rural Vernon County, but our coverage is very good, and we want to get to those victims as soon as possible. With domestic violence, there is that chance of danger, as with any unknown that you're walking into. So having as much information ahead of time for these responding officers is critical. And our communications professionals do a great job with keeping someone on the line when it is safe to do so.
Susan, Vernon County got this $200,000 in federal grant funding. Part of that, as I understand it, will go toward those community response teams that Sheriff Torgerson just mentioned. What are those teams? What do they do?
Yeah, so it's, we call it the HEART team. It's a Help End Abuse Response Team, and it's run through the Vernon County Domestic Abuse Project at the Family and Children's Center. They are one of our local partners. And what we have done is we've trained local volunteers to be on call. And when they are called, they come out with resources and have a full packet of information to share with the victim. We know that victims are unlikely to call, and when they do call, it's super important for to make sure that we get them the right resources they need at that time. Because if we wait, the chance that their perpetrator is back in the house or they've been texting and the cycle of abuse starts all over again. So we are, what happens is an officer goes to the scene, secures the scene. Ideally, as Sheriff Torgerson said, we have two officers at every scene for domestic violence due to safety reasons. But in a rural area, that's not always 100% available. And so the officer goes and secures the scene, and then they call the dispatch, and dispatch calls a HEART volunteer to come out to the scene to meet with the victim and help them figure out what their options are and create a safety plan.
Susan, can you talk a little more about the kind of help, advice, information that HEART a worker would give to the victim in that situation?
Yeah, I'll use it as an example. I serve on the HEART team as well. A call that we went out on, we ideally like to have two volunteers on a call, but that also doesn't always happen. But we came out to the call and sat with the victim, showed her the power and control wheels to help her understand the cycle of abuse that she was in. So that created quite a bit of awareness for her for the first time. And she was already getting text messages from the perpetrator, and there's all sorts of issues. There's financial isolation, there's fear. And she said to us, we sat with her for an hour and a half talking about the cycles of abuse, what our local resources are, where she can get both financial help and get in touch with an advocate through the Family and Children's Center program. And at the end, she said, if you all hadn't come, I would be back with him by tomorrow morning. But because you were here and we had this conversation, I have the courage to do something different.
Sheriff Torgerson, do you see this? You've been at this this program not a huge amount of time now, but are you seeing results in terms of, you know, maybe this situation resolves in a positive way and maybe you're not being called to the same address for the same situation again?
Well, Rob, some of those numbers are hard to quantify.
Sure.
However, we are we're seeing huge success with the program in that it is so nice that too often we spend more time with the perpetrator than with the victim. And that's wrong, Rob. And that's where the HEART team supplements that. And we're able to get these volunteers immediately or as soon as possible with the victim and to share those resources like Susan spoke about.
We're talking about an effort to reduce rural domestic violence. Our guests are Vernon County Sheriff Roy Torgerson and licensed clinical social worker Susan Townsley. Susan, the HEART program, the volunteers here are a key part of the effort. They're not the only part, I understand. There's also training for local healthcare providers, local social service providers to maybe spot those warning signs before we get that crisis call. Can you talk about that part of the effort?
Yes, absolutely. We have done quite a bit of training for local law enforcement and community members. The more awareness we create, the more likely we are to have community members call in, reach out to a neighbor and let them know that there is help available. And so we've been doing quite a bit of training in that way. We are also, one of the things that I think has helped our program be the most effective is our coordinated community response team that we are very proud of. At once a month around the table, we have Sheriff Torgerson, myself, the domestic violence advocates, our family court commissioner, our district attorney, all of the players that are involved in the domestic violence process and system. And we look at what the work we've been doing. We look at what's happening. We say, is there anything we can do better?
Sheriff Torgerson, I want to stay with training for a moment. Understatement, we ask a lot of law enforcement to be able to respond to a huge variety of different situations. What kind of additional training now are people in your department getting when it comes to dealing with that domestic violence situation?
Rob, I think you just have to get back to the basics that unfortunately, there have been some domestic abuse homicides in the region, and that is what we're really working hard to prevent. We want to prevent all violence, but those situations have arose over the years, and you have to remind officers of that danger. And this early intervention, I think that we're already seeing results, and having the second element of the abusers program is so important. But back to the training element is having the HEART team actually makes it easier for us. Rob, it took a while to sell this to the officers. That's with any change you implement in law enforcement. They go through so much training. They're used to doing things one way. But once we got the officers to realize that these advocates and the HEART volunteers, they're there to take some of that load off of the officers so they can focus on their job, but yet the victim is not forgotten. So for us, it's more of an awareness than any additional training.
Susan, I want to key in on something that both you and Sheriff Torgerson mentioned. Of course, we think a lot about supporting victims in domestic violence situations, very important part of it. You've both mentioned, though, not just, you know, law enforcement and arresting perpetrators were appropriate, but also helping turn people who perpetrate domestic violence into people who don't. What kind of things are out there for that pathway?
Yeah. So that is why we are so blessed in Vernon County with leaders who really deeply care. And our current Vernon County District Attorney and our has been amazing. And every perpetrator that is charged with a crime goes straight to a domestic violence assessment. As you know, we cannot make everybody do everything that is recommended, but almost every perpetrator is getting a full assessment. What do they need to be able to stop the cycle of violence? If we only support victims, our perpetrators simply go out and find new victims. So in order to really change the system in our community and become a county where domestic violence is not tolerated, which is our goal, we have to have a path forward for both victims and perpetrators. So they go through an assessment. Most are referred to group. We do have a few women in group. The majority of those charged with domestic violence are men. And so we have a men's group too. My husband and I run that group together for the men, and then I run the group for the women. And the focus is to make sure they understand their responsibility, their culpability, and take responsibility for their actions and learn what it means to be in a healthy relationship and how to control our trigger responses.
Susan, I want to stay with you for a moment. Sheriff Torgerson mentioned flagging when kids are present in domestic violence incidents. What kind of support is there for kids and also for helping them break maybe a generational cycle of domestic abuse?
Right. Thank you for highlighting that. That is one of the main issues, reasons that we are doing this work is we will never change our systems and our communities and reduce violence in our communities if children are raised in violent homes. That is a huge motivator for me to do this work. If we can raise children in homes with love and healthy attachment, we have a whole different world out there. And so that's the goal. And children, if we can teach parents to communicate in a healthy way, to understand a big part of both of the women's group and the men's group is how do you help your children heal from trauma? How do you assure healthy communication around your children and make sure that you're not using aggressive language and violent acts in front of them?
Now, Sheriff Torgerson, you are taking this experience, this project, to your colleagues literally from around the world at the International Association of Chiefs of Police. Some of your colleagues in Wisconsin might be listening right now. What is your message for them? What do you want them to learn from your experience so far?
First of all, when Susan contacted me back in 2022 about this program, I was immediately on board. As Susan said, I'm very community-minded. And what we hope to present is a model for other agencies to follow. I don't know if Susan told you, but we receive more than our original ask in this grant. The folks that administer this grant were so impressed with the proposal that was put forward. And I really want to thank Susan for putting a lot of that time and effort into that. She did a lot of the hands-on work in applying for this grant. It was my job to get on the bully pulpit and support it, which I do, but Susan did a lot of the work. And I think that this model will be something that will be followed and presenting at the International Association of Chiefs of Police in Boston is going to be a huge sounding board for the program. I am just so, so impressed with my team, and it's just such a privilege to be able to present to these law enforcement professionals across the entire country.
And Susan, finally, for your colleagues around the state who might work as social workers or domestic violence prevention, what would you say to encourage them to reach out and take a next level of partnership with law enforcement in their community?
Yeah, I think especially in rural community and communities, and but true across the country, is that we spend a lot of time as communities complaining about each other. And our systems are not perfect, but we don't get anything done by doing that. If we can connect with each other, create personal relationships, and figure out how to support each other between social workers and law enforcement and child protective services and the district attorney's office, and really get to know each other and understand that we're all looking for the same end game, which is a healthy, safe community in which to live and raise our children, those are the steps forward.
We'll leave it there. Susan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having us. We really appreciate you highlighting our work and taking the time to be with us.
And Sheriff Torgerson, thanks for being with us today.
Been such a pleasure speaking with you today, Rob, and Susan, you as well.
Susan Townsley is a licensed clinical social worker at Stonehouse Counseling in Viroqua, and Roy Torgerson is the Vernon County Sheriff. With us today to share Vernon County's Rural Violent Crime Reduction Initiative that they'll be presenting at the International Association of Chiefs of Police Conference and Exposition. That's next week.
Still ahead on Wisconsin Today, a new regional diaper bank will serve families in 15 counties in eastern Wisconsin.
We want to make sure that we're getting enough diapers in the hands of individuals and families that desperately need it.
Two nonprofits combine efforts to make a bigger impact for new parents who are struggling financially. That's next on WPR News. It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Verrett. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a business owner.
It's part of a series on women in southern Wisconsin in partnership with Midwest Mujeres.
Having a kid can completely transform a person's life. And for some people, like Jasmine Lopez of Fitchburg, having kids led her towards an unexpected career. She told me about this as part of a storytelling partnership with Midwest Mujeres in Madison. When Lopez was 16 years old, her family moved from Mexico to the United States. She went to Verona Area High School, which she says was a great experience.
After high school, I saved enough money because I wanted to enroll in college. I wanted to be a teacher, but instead I became a mom.
Lopez's goal shifted. Now she wanted to be the best mom she could be. Eventually, Lopez met her current husband and had a second child. She was happy being a stay-at-home mom, but eventually she became restless.
I realized that I was doing the same thing, putting the kids to bed, wake up in the morning, clean the house. And I think I was in some sort of postpartum depression for a while. I was so stuck on doing all the mom stuff that I really didn't pay attention to it. But I realized that I really didn't have many friends.
So she went online to find mom groups. She met moms who were selling homemade goods so they could make money while staying home with their kids. This intrigued Lopez. She was thinking more about her kids' college fund and her own retirement.
I help other people to clean their houses and organize them before. And they were always like, oh, you should do this as a business. So I started learning more. I started taking courses and classes. And I really didn't want to open a business, but a lot of people kept telling me, just do it. You're really good at it. And one day I said, well, I'm going to start doing it, but I'm just going to take it one day at a time.
Then her husband registered an LLC for her. There was no turning back. So Lopez started Ketorisma Cleaning in Fitchburg. She says it's rewarding work since she sees the changes in her clients' lives.
I have noticed that a lot of clients that I help, after we've been serving their homes, they start reorganizing stuff. Now they can focus in cleaning the garage. Now they can focus in cleaning the closets. Or now they're going to paint the walls in their house. And I really like seeing those changes. One thing that I think it should change is that house cleaners are not seen as professionals, which is not true. A lot of us have to take certifications. When COVID hit, there was certifications how to properly sanitize areas. You can just go and bleach anything. It's not safe.
Plus, there are a lot of specialties in the cleaning world. Some professionals focus on crime scenes, and others prefer working with an aging population. Lopez has created an online community to bring this diverse group of professionals together.
We want to be able to open a network where individuals can make, well, businesses can make connections with each other, and they can help each other grow.
In some ways, building that community within her industry was inspired by those mom groups she joined years ago. But it's also part of Lopez's driving philosophy in life right now.
I think we just really have to get back to our community. Just like get to know your neighbors, talk to them, say hi to them. Just be a kid again, because kids do that. They just go and start talking to somebody without like being scared or afraid of. And I think that can solve a lot of problems that we have. Yeah.
Jasmine Lopez shared her story with us as part of a partnership with Midwest Mujeres in Madison. We've partnered with the organization to share stories of women who live in southern Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowland Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
You're listening to Wisconsin Today.
Low-income families face multiple challenges when welcoming a new baby. The Institute for Research on Poverty at UW-Madison says these families face high costs and limited supplies of an essential good. Diapers.
In eastern Wisconsin, nonprofits are banding together to try to fill that gap. Jake's Network of Hope is merging with United Way Fox City to provide a new regional diaper bank serving 15 counties.
To learn more, we have Renee Verstegen, Resource Development Specialist at United Way Fox City. Renee, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And Scott Sawinski is executive director of Appleton-based Jake's Network of Hope, providing diaper and hygiene product assistance. Scott, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Scott, a national diaper bank network report said diaper need rose nationally from nearly one-third of families in 2010 to nearly half of families last year. Why is the need for diapers on the rise?
Well, there's a lot of factors that lead to that. First and foremost, it's the cost of goods. We've seen that increased inflation over the last several years, especially since the global pandemic, that it's just a really hard thing to try to purchase additional supplies that you're needed. We all do a great job of supporting our food pantries and our food banks, but if a family is struggling to afford food to put on their table, they're definitely going to also find the need that they need to purchase hygiene supplies and diapers. And that is one of the biggest things that we're seeing right now, why did this big jump in diaper need across the nation and right here in Wisconsin.
Renee, the Federal Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, known as WIC, it doesn't cover diapers or wipes, and so low-income mothers may rely on diaper banks like yours for their supplies. Can you talk about these struggles and what you've learned?
That is correct. We're working on trying to get Wisconsin to recognize diapers and menstrual products, period products, to become an essential item. These items are obviously essential to our lives. And unfortunately, these services, they cannot use their funds towards those items. So we are here to try to help supplement that. And by giving them these essential items as diapers or period products, we can help them then spread their other income, their other dollars towards other essential items.
Okay. And Scott, now there is this merger in place to build a larger diaper network. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, we're really a fortunate group of organizations here in the Fox Cities. It's definitely a place that loves to give back, and it's a place that loves community collaboration. Both of our diaper banks existed here in the greater Appleton area for the last 10 plus years. And earlier this year, we decided to kind of just have a conversation around how we could increase our efficiencies while making an increased impact in our communities because of those statistics that you just heard about. We wanted to make sure that we're getting enough diapers in the hands of individuals and families that desperately need it. So United Way Fox Cities and Jake's Network of Hope got together and just talked about how could we do this a little bit better. And it just made sense to combine both the efforts of our diaper banks and operate out of one location in Appleton at the VPI production facility in Appleton. It's we call it the hub, Fox Cities, and that's where we have our state-of-the-art IPA clean room to repack the diapers. And we have sufficient warehouse space to store the processed diapers that go out to the families that need those.
Renee, can you talk about the effort of repacking diapers and what this expansion will mean?
The repacking of diapers, so when we get donations, they come in all different sizes of boxes, packages. We repack them into equitable sized packages so that whichever agency our families are receiving services from, we serve about 50 different agencies now in the community or Eastern Wisconsin, and they will know that they can go to any of those agencies and receive the same amount of diapers as any other family is receiving. So what we do is we unpack those, we put them in equitable sized packages, and we box those up, and then we store them to get those distributed to the agencies in our community.
But 15 counties, that's an expansive area. I'm wondering, is it an issue in getting these diapers into the hands of parents in all corners of these counties?
Yes. So we really strive to try to serve as many areas as we can. But obviously, that is why we are continuously trying to raise funds, trying to get those donations in so that we can get them repacked and out to the community.
Scott, what is on your mind about a 15-county region and serving it?
Well, that's always been something that Jake's worked really hard to try to navigate through, because our region that we were serving was about 12 counties prior to this merging of the diaper banks, right? And what we started to institute is we actually purchased a box truck, and we're able to do rural diaper drops in communities that can't make it towards Appleton to pick up the diapers that are processed here. So we actually will go out and deliver those to multiple agencies in a county. And we're seeing that happening in Green Lake County, and we're working on the upper northern counties that we serve. So it's really actually an exciting time where we can partner with other people as well to make sure that we're bringing the diapers to those that need it that maybe can't get to Appleton and the Fox Cities.
We're talking about the merger of diaper banks in eastern Wisconsin. Scott Sawinski there, executive director at Jake's Network of Hope. And Renee Verstegen is resource development specialist at United Way Fox Cities. Renee, do you find that mothers sometimes often have to try to stretch diapers beyond their recommended use? How much of a fix might parents be in?
Yes, that is one of the huge reasons we do what we do. Parents will prolong changing the diaper on their infants to extend that supply of diapers that they have, which creates, of course, infections and health issues. And if the baby is not happy and it's crying, and the parents then are also taking on that stress, and that affects mental health as well.
Scott, Kimberly Clark founded Inena. Today, you know, we see this multinational corporation providing brands like Huggies, like Pull-Ups. What is their involvement in this regional bank?
Yeah, we're really, really thankful for the partnership that we have with Kimberly Clark, A, because they are in our backyard, and B, because they really do care about diaper need across this country. They are a founding member of the National Diaper Bank Network, which is basically our national organization that we adhere to guidelines, and we're a membership-based part of that. So both of our diaper banks were a previous member of this, and we remain as those members. But Kimberly Clark is really the presenting sponsor of our diaper bank. So it is known as the Kimberly Clark Eastern Wisconsin Diaper Bank in partnership with Jake's Network of Hope and United Way Fox Cities. And they're there just to really make sure that we're trying to fill all the gaps that we have, because we can't supply all the diapers that are being requested right now. We really do need the incredible donations that corporations like Kimberly Clark provide, as well as the community can handle as well.
Will this merger make you stronger?
I'm 100% convinced it's going to. It is more of a, as our friend Lisa, who the president and CEO of United Way Fox City, says, 1 + 1 is something greater than 2, hopefully, because of this merge. And we really hope that our efficiencies will help us make a greater impact, that we can get a bigger supply of diapers in there, and that we can just meet the needs of our community. Because right now, we're not fulfilling their whole need. And that is why we did this, because we want to change this heading into 2025.
Scott and Renee, thank you so much. Thank you for your time, and appreciate you joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, and thank you for helping to bring awareness about the diaper need in our community.
That is Renee Verstegen, Resource Development Specialist at United Way Fox Cities. And Scott Sawinski is Executive Director of Appleton-based Jake's Network of Hope, providing diaper and hygiene product assistance to people in need. We've been learning about a new co-operated diaper bank. It's known as the Kimberly Clark Eastern Wisconsin Diaper Bank. And for disclosure, Kimberly Clark Corporation is a business sponsor of WPR.
If you watch TV live or streaming, you may be seeing lots and lots of political campaign ads lately. It's one of the side effects of living in a swing state.
Okay, you throw in those texts and those phone calls, the billboards, the online ads, and you get that whiplash. There's a chance you might feel a little sick of all the campaigning.
Tell us about it. Are you tired of the ads? Do you want to go back to just seeing ads for beer, insurance, and prescription medications? Email wisconsintoday@wpr.org or call 888-642-0232.
We'd love to hear what's on your mind. And if you are from a less swingy neighboring state, do you even know what we're talking about? Again, call 888-642-0232. Email wisconsintoday@wpr.org. Wisconsin Today is the work of a team of producers, hosts, and technical directors. Learn more about us at wpr.org/Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to WPR News.